Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to the first playoff edition of the Between the Tackles podcast. I'm Joe Bergemanish alongside as well. Boys, I think every single game besides the Sunday night game was decided by one score. So an unbelievable weekend of football. I think the drama and the games, how they played out, was some poetic justice for the season we went through.
Absolutely. I mean, I can think back for the last couple of years, man, and the wild card weekend was always kind of a dud. You're so excited, and there's so many blowouts that occur in that. I'm just very happy that the one game that was decided by more than one score was the best game of the weekend, baby.
That game was horrible, dude. That was the worst game of the damn weekend, dude. As a Pats fan, I was puking on myself. That's an ugly football, dude. Both quarterbacks didn't have it. Drake May had it in the fourth quarter when he really, really needed it, unlike Justin Herbert. So, I don't know.
We'll get into it.
Keep it in your GD pants over there, dude. Manish, you want to kick it off with the darlings of the podcast for most of the year? The Rams taking down the Panthers 34-31 in Carolina in an excellent game, if you caught this one.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun, and you know, I remember last week when we were previewing the games, I came across a startling betting statistic, which was that the Panthers were 8-0 against the spread following a loss this season, and they were obviously coming off a loss in Week 18 against the Bucs. So, you know, that 10 or 10.5 point line, whatever you got entering that game, seems so appealing to take the Carolina side, even though I never really thought it was going to be a game. I was totally wrong about that because the Panthers, you know, played a gritty game and they took a fourth quarter game winning drive on the road by Matthew Stafford to pull this out. You know, when I look at the Rams and kind of how this may play out, it's reminiscent of one of those like top, you know, one or two seeds in the NCAA men's basketball tournament that gets a scare in the first round and then they end up going on a run. So I'm not daunted by what happened in terms of how I feel the Rams can do in this playoffs. I think they will go to the Super Bowl. They have a fairly challenging game upcoming against the Bears, but I like the fact that they were tested. You know, I would have preferred for them to blow everybody out, and they probably would have been on their way if Puka Nacua didn't drop a short, easy touchdown, I guess, late in the first half, which would have put them up by 3 touchdowns, I think. They took their foot off the gas a little bit. Stafford's dealing with a sprained finger, but they survived and advanced, and they're just too talented, I think, to not march on to the conference title game.
Yeah, the Panthers struck me as that, like, accounting major who's going to be doing taxes in 2 years, like, dropping 40 on Kentucky in front of, like, a packed house in, like, Omaha, Nebraska, where some dude paid, like, $8 to get in, and he's, like, 400 yards away from – you ever see some of the fucking tickets they sell to those games, dude? Those guys are legitimately thousands of feet away from – the best is when they quote it, it's like, dude, ball don't lie, ref. Like, horrible call. I'm 5,000 feet away. Anyway, but yeah, dude, I said last week and I kept saying that the Rams strike me as the as the Mac Jones Pats teams where they kind of have to get the ball on the ground, turn the game into kind of a little bit of a quagmire to keep it close and to pull through in some of these games. Wow, was that the exact opposite of how this game kind of played out? The Rams let their foot off the gas and the Panthers busted the door wide open. You'll say what you want about Bryce Young, but I watched that what could have potentially been a game-winning drive and the throw to, I think it was Jalen Coker in the end zone to go ahead that forced the game-winning drive by Matt Stafford. I mean, that's just simply a dime. Throwing touchdown passes on the goal line, no matter how much we bring it up as an anti-Matt Stafford stat. I mean, dude, the windows are smaller. People are close together. You're in a closer area. Like, it's just facts. And I think that I don't know if it opens my eyes to the Panthers organization, but it definitely opens my eyes to like Bryce Young and in a young team at least punching out of their weight class for one Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, I mean, I was definitely impressed to an extent on how Bryce Young and the Panthers played. I didn't expect them to go and put up 31 points in this game. I did expect it to be within the spread, which was 10.5 points. Bryce Young didn't get help on that last drive either. I mean, he had a conversion on fourth down that was just simply dropped by, I think it was, Jimmy Horn Jr. was his name. I don't really know much about him, but yeah, it was a perfect pass and he just simply dropped it. The future is bright for this Panthers team if they can continue to build off off this season in general going forward with Bryce Young. I was pretty impressed with how they played. Pretty impressed with Puka Nacua too. We're in that first quarter. What did he have? Like five completions by Stafford were to Nacua for like something in like the high 70, 80 yards. I don't know the exact number, but like, it was just like, they had no answer for him early in the game. And then as the game settled in, the Panthers put up a really strong fight. And, you know, looking at this game, I mean, the Panthers gave the Rams obvious fits in the regular season when they played them, but I don't know if it speaks a little bit to, you know, me having a little bit of doubts about this Rams team, especially going into the divisional round, that it took this much to beat a under 500 division winner in the wild card round. So it'll be interesting to see how the Rams do going down the stretch.
Yeah, they got a lot of work to do. I mean, they committed 9 penalties. That's not going to cut it as you go further.
It's the least penalized team in the league. They commit 9 penalties.
Such a strange game. As you just said, Joe, it was so weird to see them flagged as much as they were. And they were terrible on third down as well. You know, just getting back to Puka for a second, because I think we had this conversation a few weeks back when the Rams played in Seattle and he had, I don't know, over 200 yards, 250 yards, whatever it was. Just the sheer volume of targets that he got in that game. He had 18 targets in this game as well. I still don't understand why teams don't take away Puka Nacua. And the fact that Matthew Stafford targeted him 18 of his 42 dropbacks is startling to me. I don't get how defenses don't say, this guy's not going to beat us.
Dude, they're striking me. I know he's on the team, but they strike me as the new Aaron Rodgers, Davante Adams. Like, doesn't matter how much resources you throw at it. They're going to come through eventually. Just to tie a bow on this whole Panthers thing, I will never stop pounding. I will be pounding for the rest of my life. And don't you ever stop pounding out there. And last thing I will say, Panthers locked up their defensive coordinator. I can't pronounce his name, but they locked up their Ariho Evero for a couple more years. I think that's well-deserved for what he did with that defensive unit this year. Can we get to the piece de resistance on Saturday night, dude? This game, this was an all-time game, dude. Division, interdivision game, two young quarterbacks going at it, making their legacy, dude. And I don't want to toot my own horn, but, dude, I love this Bears team. Caleb Williams, one of those interceptions was bad. One of them was, I in my opinion, on the receiver. There's some stuff he's like at 50% completion rate. It looks all over the place at one time, but goddamn, is that dude nails when it matters, man. That was a fun game to watch.
Yeah, I was one where I was watching this game. I was all about the Bears, and then I think it was right after, I think was it Matthew Golden's first touchdown of the year late in that fourth quarter. I was texting with Manish, and I was like, I'm going to bed. I got to be up early. This game's over. And then I wake up to a text from Manish, and he's like, wake up, Burge, wake up. And I'm like, and I wake up, it's like 4:30 in the morning. I'm going to work, and I'm like, holy crap, the Bears came back. Unbelievable. And, you know, this was a unique situation too, because it was the third matchup between these two teams in like the last month of 5 weeks, I think is what it was, 6 weeks. And it didn't disappoint. I mean, 25 points in the fourth quarter. It's right up there with a postseason comeback with the Super Bowl with the Patriots, if I'm not mistaken. Just right up there. Unbelievable. And it's something to say about this team. I mean, again, through the first two and a half quarters of this game, three quarters, like, I was like, Ben Johnson is getting absolutely pantsed by Matt LaFleur again. The way that the execution was going, the way that, you know, just the general feel of the game, it just felt like this was ultimately in Green Bay's control. And holy crap, awesome thing to wake up for somebody who thinks that the Bears have a legitimate shot here.
It was so eerily reminiscent of the game in Chicago between these teams a few weeks back, week 16. The Packers were up in that first game in Chicago by 10 with 5 minutes to go. And in this past weekend's game, they're up by 11 with 5 minutes to go, and they lost both games. I mean, it's absolutely devastating for Packers fans. I just can't imagine losing to your bitter division rival twice in a month, including in the playoffs, by blowing double digits leads with just a few minutes left. It just unbelievable. Joe, I think you hit the nail on the head on Caleb Williams. I don't think he played particularly well as a whole, but when I think of this game, just like in that first matchup in Chicago, week 16, I think of the overtime long touchdown to DJ Moore. This game, I think of maybe 5-6 minutes left, somewhere around there, 4th and 8, and Caleb Williams eludes trouble. He runs, I believe, to his left, completes a 27-yarder to Roma Dunze. That was just an unbelievable championship quality play. So for all of the uneven play that he had throughout the course of the first 3.5 quarters, you know, when it mattered most, he delivered. He delivered in such an unbelievably painful way to Packers fans. I just can't imagine losing that way to the same team twice within a few weeks. And then on top of all of that, to have Ben Johnson in the game-winning locker room and drop profanity, say that he F the Packers, I effing hate them. And then he doubled down a couple of days later and saying, look, he talked to ownership. They have no problem with it. You know, these are two bitter rivals, and he, you know, he's a very passionate, emotional coach. And to do that in the locker room, I don't think I've ever actually seen that. Like, I don't think I've ever heard a winning coach in the locker room say F the other team. I mean, I've been covering the NFL for, you know, over 15 years, and I can't recall any coach doing that. And I covered Rex Ryan. So it's amazing. Just an unbelievable night. Again, if you don't have a stake for either team, to watch how that game unfolded was very, very entertaining.
Yeah, the only thing I can think of, like, in that regard, Burge, is in your neck of the woods, it's actually a pregame speech when Herb Brooks told the Americans, screw them.
Yeah.
So, yeah, dude, I love this game. I love this game. I love Caleb Williams, dude. I wasn't sold on him coming out of the draft. I think that was more Drake May Patriots coperism than it is anything else. He seems to be proving me wrong a little bit in that respect. But Manish, I want to bring back to something you said. What does this legitimize the Bears season for you, or do you think that the Packers did more to lose this game, and you think you need to see a little bit more from the Bears?
No, I mean, look, I thought the Bears were fraudulent, and I give them credit for just a historic rally. You can't take that back. I mean, that's forever. This win in this fashion is forever. I don't know what's going to happen next week or the week after that if they survive. But when you look back at this rivalry specifically, and it goes back, you know, decades, this win in this fashion is forever. That does not change my opinion that the Packers coughed up both of those games. I think that's a clear indictment on Matt LaFleur, who incredibly now is going to get an extension.
You took the words right out of my mouth.
Look, he's got 1 year left on his contract, but coaches typically are not lame ducks. So, you know, that this is where the rubber meets the road if you're the decision maker. You either fire him or you extend him, and it appears now, by all accounts, that they will extend him. I wholeheartedly disagree with that for, you know, a number of reasons that we discussed on previous podcasts. I just don't think that you can exit the way that you've exited the last couple years, you know, barely getting in as a 7 seed, and then cough up these games in the manner that they have coughed them up and still retain your job. I disagree with what the Packers are doing, but they evidently believe that they can still get to where they want to go with LaFleur in charge.
Go for it, Bert.
Do you guys think that the Packers are trying to ploy anybody into trying to trade for Matt LaFleur when with this coming out, like, especially right now?
I think they're waiting for fucking Harbaugh's agent to call them and be like, hey, if that doesn't go well, let me know.
Yeah, I don't think anybody's going to give up any kind of draft compensation.
I don't either.
I wouldn't anticipate.
Dude, imagine a team giving up a fucking pick for Matt LaFleur, dude. I'd burn Gillette down, dude. Straight up.
See, I think he's a good coach. I think he's ultimately a good coach, but like
small g good.
Probably more so a better coordinator. A better coordinator than a head coach.
Agreed. So. Hey, just real quick, you guys know I love my analogies and my frigging correlations and shit like that. I don't know why, but after this game, do you guys – I'm going to cross sports here. Red Sox-Yankees in 2004, there was a skirmish at late in the regular season where Jason Varitek punched A-Rod in the face, and then they came back in the postseason again So they came back in that game, and then they came back in the postseason, obviously the best comeback in baseball history. Like, everybody knows what I'm talking about. And they kind of flipped the script on the rivalry for at least a little bit. Maybe it's flipped back because John Henry is the worst owner in professional baseball, but we'll get to that on a different podcast. But I just see, like, a good correlation between the Bears getting over the hump these last two victories, comeback victories versus like their big brother in their division. I don't know. Could be flipping the script. Could be a little bit of a change in tides in that huge rivalry that I think Green Bay's dominated for the last however many years.
Yeah, I think you actually buried the lead when talking about that game. I mean, Veritek A-Rod was, you know, a pretty interesting scuffle, but that was also when Don Zimmer got thrown to the ground by Pedro Martinez after
that was
Don
a year Zimmer. Before.
Oh, was the year before? Year before. How many fights did the Red Sox and the Yankees have?
I don't know, dude. But all I want to say, dude, is watching the watching the pregame for the Niners and Eagles. We'll get to that game in a second. But watching that pregame and them like getting into it and getting fired up and like they actually, like you said, dude, Ben Johnson actually fucking hates the Packers, dude. He hates the Packers, and I honestly think Trent Williams and Big Dom, if you ask them, they would do a pay-per-view Netflix fight sponsored by Jake Paul. I guarantee both of them would say yes to that fight.
That's an unfair fight. Trent Williams would have Big Dom.
Isn't Trent Williams like 6'8"?
Yeah, yeah. just to put a bow on this, it has nothing to do with what we're talking about, but Johnny Damon, one of the nicest, classiest athletes I've ever been around and covered. I covered baseball before football. And when he was on the Yankees, you couldn't ask for a better guy. Just like an unbelievably nice human being. So, you know, shout out to Johnny Damon.
He's one of those nice players that's like, you know, like every person you come across in your line of work, Manish, and even like random people at like friggin' Target, like say the exact same thing. He did sell out and go to the Yankees. I won't hold it against him, but
I do.
Yeah, look, I got one quick story that, you know, that we can move off of it.
Let it rip.
So there's a, you know, pretty clear rule in locker rooms, you know, baseball locker rooms, football locker rooms, you know, basketball, whatever. You can't ask players for autographs. You know, that's unprofessional. It's kind of crossing the line. I've only seen one person in my 25 years in sports media actually ask an athlete for an autograph, and it was Keith Olbermann. Wanted a baseball signed by Johnny Damon, and Johnny Damon could not have been more gracious. I was actually taken aback when I witnessed it, and Keith Olbermann was being really coy about it because he knows what the rules are. You can't do that. You can't be a fan. And Johnny Damon signed his ball, and I think he, you know, had a little conversation with Olbermann. You know, very polite, very pleasant, and I can tell you, covering those Yankee teams, there are plenty of guys on that team that would have said, are you kidding me? Like, no, I'm not going to do that. But Damon was very gracious.
For Olbermann, the guys are probably going over trying to get their signature on the ball. But hey, Manish, hey, you actually triggered my memory. I wanted to talk about this perfect segue about professionalism in the locker room. What did you think about that lady from, we'll transition right into the Bills Jaguars game with the lead, which is the I forget her name. She's a 25-year veteran of whatever paper covers the Jaguars, and she gave Liam Cohen some unbelievable word. I loved it. Everybody who seemed that was their profession didn't love it. As the resident professional in this field, what say you about that? How did your initial reaction, and how are you kind of a couple like a day later processing it?
Yeah, that's a great question. Her name's Lynn Jones. I believe she works for the Jacksonville Free Press. Not a Jags reporter, beat reporter. I think she covers the city at large. Maybe she covers sports at large as well. A variety of different roles for that publication. I would say this. I think it's commendable that she showed the level of empathy that she did. Liam Cohen, because clearly, you know, as you said, you know, she's been in the Jacksonville market for, you know, 25, 30 years. She obviously has an affinity for the area. I don't know if she grew up in Jacksonville, but clearly she's been a part of the fabric of that community. What I would say is that I think there's a time and place, for those types of conversations. And I've had those conversations with coaches and players throughout the years where I typically do that privately. That's my MO. whether it's, you know, getting somebody off to the side after a press conference in a hallway, or what I would do probably 9 times out of 10 is just call them or text them and have a private conversation, you know, in that respect. I don't think it's the worst thing in the world. And I understand and appreciate reporters, many of whom I know and who I have a great deal of respect for, coming out and saying, hey, look, this is unprofessional. This is not the place to do it. It's a work environment. I totally understand that. I think that's a fair and valid criticism. Now, criticizing the person, I think, is a little bit over the line. I think she was well-intentioned. And again, showing that level of empathy is an admirable trait. It's a great quality to have. But, you know, you, as a journalist, you are not a fan of the team. You're certainly not, you know, employed by the team. They, you know, each team has their own videographers and writers. They're essentially extensions of the public relations department, and they all have a role, and I respect their jobs. I think as an independent journalist, however, you've really got to maintain the middle of the road view, you know, and cheerleading is not part of that dynamic. And that's why every press box has a longstanding rule, no cheering in the press box. You know, a team scores a touchdown, you can't go up, you know, and start clapping your hands. And if, you know, if they throw a pick, you can't start screaming and yelling. You know, you can't do that. You got to maintain a level of, you know, impartial evaluation. And, you know, I think there was probably a better forum for Lynn to do that. Again, it's not the worst thing in the world. So, you know, it's maybe 30 seconds. I don't know how long that clip was. Hopefully that doesn't become a habit, you know, for people that cover the team. But, you know, it's not something that I would have done. She genuinely seems like a caring and thoughtful person. I've seen subsequent interviews with her talking about this, you know, talking about this interaction with Liam Cohen. Not something I would do, but again, not the worst thing in the world. At the end of the day, though, you do have to hold the players and the coaches and the teams that you cover to account. That is paramount for any journalist. I understand fans on social media might not understand that. That's all well and good. So again, since me rambling on, I do understand both sides of the coin. She seems like a genuinely nice human being, and there's nothing wrong with expressing those sentiments. I probably just would have done that privately.
Yeah, and I think I agree with everything you said. I obviously, Burge and I come at it from, like, our gut instinct is a different, something a little different, you know what I mean? And I just thought it was, the part that I thought was cool, Cohen's an intense guy. If you see him look at her, and then she starts speaking, and the difference in his face and his eyes light up, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I thought that was kind of cool. We need more shit like that in the world, but I do agree that there's a time and place to do nice things, and there's a time and place to be objective and make sure that you're being, like, a neutral arbiter. But we buried the lead. Josh Allen had, like, 3 fingers hanging off. I think he had, like, a knee injury within the first 5 minutes of the game. They did, like, 9 push-pushes, and he came up lame 8 times, and he still comes away with the win. And the most on par Trevor Lawrence interception at the end of the game. That's kind of what I take away from this, is the Jags are still the Jags. Josh Allen looks like he's the man on a mission with Mahomes out of the way in the AFC. I don't know if you guys saw anything else other than that.
Yeah. I mean, I second the thought about the Jags being the Jags. I mean, Trevor Lawrence was very unimpressive in this game. I know he threw for 3 touchdowns, but the 2 interceptions were costly. I don't know why they stopped running the ball in this game. I mean, you look at
ETN
some of the numbers.
ETN was their best player all day.
ETN averaging 6 points. I would argue Bashaul Tootin was better. I mean, what was that? Yeah. That drive in the second quarter, they gave it to him 4 straight times. He ripped off no less than 10 yards on those 4 carries, and then they didn't give it to him the rest of the game. So from that sense, I'm like, what were you doing down there? And, you know, can I just say, can we please get rid – of the tush push in the NFL? Because I'm sorry, if you're advancing the ball because your offensive lineman is literally picking you up off the ground to move the ball, that's not football. It's just not. It's dumb. It's not a football play. I am so over it. That was like the trigger point for me. Like, 3 guys, one of them picking the guy off the ground to push him 9 yards to almost score a touchdown. Like, you've got to be kidding me. Like that. Yeah, there's a sense of bias, obviously, coming from this.
No. Look, Burge, you know that I have called you out many times for your anti Josh Allen bias, but you're 1,000,000% right here. I mean, I don't like the tush push. I'm a lifelong Eagles fan, and I didn't like it last year. A sick part of me is happy that they weren't successful with it this year. They kind of, you know, stopped going to it every single week. Now, they did it a couple times the other day, but you can't have an offensive lineman pick up your quarterback for, you know, 6-7 yards. It was the most outrageous play I've seen in years. It was so ridiculous. And the fact that it's legal, and let's be honest, it won't be legal after the season. It will be, you know, they'll get the necessary votes. They were very close last offseason, and they'll push them over the
finish line. Weren't the Bills one of the ones that proposed it too? It's the irony.
They made the Packers submit it because they can't pin it on a single owner. There's 40,000 of them, dude. Some Sean lady McDermott's in the front yard's gonna get accosted.
Sean McDermott's on record complaining about the play. The irony of it saving their season yesterday.
Yeah,
it's beautiful. The irony is beautiful.
Who said that? Sean McDermott said it was a health and safety issue, and I find that to be hilarious, given that, as you said, Joe, their quarterback was playing with 9 fingers and maybe one ankle, 1 foot. He had a scrambled brain. I think he was dealing with a concussion evaluation earlier in the game. And this guy is like basically held together by scotch tape this game. And they go to the tush push for what was the signature play of a very weird game. And look, you guys know that I'm a big Josh Allen fan, but if we're honest about it, like, this guy is not literally a one-man show, but he's as close as you can get to carrying his team to this point. This team is not particularly good, not defensively, and James Cook was good this year. He was completely ineffective in this game. This was a Josh Allen production from start to finish, and, you know, there's a reason why I thought Jacksonville would move on, because I thought they had the better team. I thought it was Josh Allen versus an entire team, and there's no way that Allen would have beaten the entire team, but that's essentially what happened here. It just speaks to how unbelievably talented he is as a player. Is he perfect? Of course not. Is he going to throw picks? Yeah. I mean, that's been, you know, the story of his career. He takes chances. He makes mistakes. Now, he didn't throw any picks in this game, but I am just done betting against them. And I know they're going to go and face the number one seed on the road in Denver next week. And
favorite.
I can't pick against them, because every time I think, you know what, this guy's down, the trainers are looking at him, this is it. He's out. He's not coming back. Or he's going to be compromised to the point where he will not make a difference the remainder of the game. He proves me wrong. He proves everybody wrong. The guy he may not be human. He is a tank. Nothing phases him physically. Every time you think he's hurt, he gets back up. And then he plays at the same level he played at virtually before he got knocked down. Just an unbelievable football player. I don't know what's going to happen. I'm going to pick the Bills. We'll get into that later. But the guy is just a machine, and he had I think he had the best performance of the weekend, single player performance of the weekend. He single-handedly carried the Bills to victory. He may have single-handedly saved Sean McDermott's job in the process. Just an unbelievable performance by one of the best players I have seen in my lifetime.
Dude, I will give him a dude. He is a fucking gamer, dude. And I hate how people, like, especially like AFC East fans, I'm not pointing the finger at you, Bears. It's not just you. But like, they call him like a complainer. And like, dude, yeah, like every quarterback like goes for calls now. It's just kind of the
every play.
But dude, I guarantee there's like snacks for him in that blue tent. He's in there so much. They probably just leave his fucking iPad in there between series because they know he's just gonna pick it up after he goes back in the blue tent. But I think, dude, the zero blitz on 4th and 8 where he throws it off his back foot 40 yards in the air and hits Brandon Cooks right between the numbers, he was wide open. But being able to make that play is like, that's an impressive physical feat. Like, it's, even though he is wide open, like, it's still like, not a lot of players in the NFL make that play. Not a lot of quarterbacks in the NFL make that play. You got to be 6'8", you got to have a rocket arm, and you have to be willing to make the throw down the field in the most important time of the season to date. Because, dude, if they get a turnover there, that's a pick, that game might be over. With the way the Jaguars are running the ball, they get the ball in not plus territory, but high in the right near midfield going the other way. I don't know. Could be a totally different story. Yeah, I think that's Jags Jagsing and Bills Billing and Josh Allen going fucking Super Saiyan or whatever the hell you want to call it. But save some Crisco for the last game, all right, Manish?
One final thing on the Jaguars. Parker Washington can fucking play.
Yep. Yeah.
He can play, dude. He's going to be a really good player for them going forward here.
Burge with an F-bomb on the
pod. I know.
He missed part of that game. He went back into the locker room for the concussion evaluation. Mm-hmm.
Did you see that? Dude, they never should have cleared him. He was fucking stumbling on the field. That was bad.
I mean, there were a lot of times this year where I can't believe they cleared Josh Allen, to be honest with you.
Same with fucking Drake May.
Oh, they were never going to keep him out of that game. There was no way the NFL
I don't think Josh Allen was going to be. I think Josh Allen probably, along with the snacks and like the airline magazines and the iPad that they leave in there for him. I think they also have a bat phone directly to Roger Goodell that's like, hey, dude, get these effing spotters out of here. I'm fucking playing. But anyway, an entertaining game, but a puke fest nonetheless. I take you to they call it the Link. Is that what they call it, Bersh? I mean, Manish, they call it the Link. Brock Purdy goes into the Link, plays a mediocre game, and comes out with the win. Eagles, another second half where the passing game is nowhere to be found when they need to sew this game away. A couple spurts by Saquon gave you a little bit of hope as an Eagles fan. Not trying to put words in your mouth, Manish, but as an Eagles backer for that game, it gave me hope. Jalen Hurts throws into triple coverage when the game is on the line. I really don't know what else to say from this game besides get that electrical substation away from George Kittle.
Yeah, look, two people that deserve a lot of credit. I thought Brock Purdy played really well. Resilient, two interceptions. You're like, okay, two interceptions on the road. You don't have George Kittle. You're already decimated on offense and defense. And to come back and have that game-winning drive, kudos to him. Kudos also to Robert Saleh, who was playing basically with a bunch of second and third stringers. His entire defense, for the most part, was banged up.
Dude, their middle linebacker with the green dot was signed on Monday.
Exactly. I mean, that's just unbelievable. That just tells you how good of a defensive coordinator he is.
They had Burge out there calling plays on defense.
That's why we won.
It's great for him. You know, Robert Saleh, one of the good guys in the NFL. It's unfortunate that his career intersected with the New York Jets, and as the case is with all players and coaches. When you get sucked into the New York Jets vortex, you gotta fight like hell to get out of it and then kind of reclaim your standing in the NFL. And I think that Robert Saleh did a really good job. And frankly, out-coach Kevin Petullo, their offensive coordinator, the first-year offensive coordinator for the Eagles, it looks like he will not be back in the offseason. It's a fascinating offseason about to get underway for the defending champs because – I don't believe the head coach is going to change, but I do believe that Nick Sirianni is going to be on the hot seat next year. I don't believe the Eagles are going to move off of Jalen Hurts, primarily because of the way his contract is structured. There's an relatively easy escape hatch after next season. So unless a team is willing to pony up a first-round pick or something, something that Howie Roseman and Jeff Lurie deem valuable, I believe he will be back for one more season. The fall guy or the scapegoat, however you want to frame it, will be Kevin Petullo. So he'll be gone. When I look at this first weekend, I see four quarterbacks on the road who had game-winning drives. And we talked about them, Stafford, Caleb, Purdy, and of course, Josh Allen. The one quarterback who was at home facing a decimated defense with the ball in his hands, 2 minutes to go, all three timeouts, who did not deliver was Jalen Hurts. And you referenced a moment ago, Joe, the fourth and 11 play, the final play for the Eagles when Jalen Hurts threw into triple coverage, incomplete pass.
With single coverage Stoddard. On the outside on both Devontae Smith and throw it on the outside and give a top three wide receiver in the game a chance to make a play. Yeah, look, I mean, fired me up. It's like, dude, this is obvious, dude. It's just like Trevor Lawrence had, what's his name, Washington deep on the final play when he threw the interception, dude. There's people open for, we'll get to it. There's people open for Herbert. There's people open on, the final play for Hurts. It just, as soon as you get to the playoffs, all of these quarterbacks who are carried by excellent rosters, I think it becomes so glaring in crunch time.
Yeah, look, for Jalen Hurts, I think there's a clear division from what he was as a younger player to what he is now, because he was actually a dual threat in his first, second, and maybe even, you know, third year as a starter, where he could beat you with his legs. And he's never been a consistently great passer, but he didn't have to be because the surrounding pieces were so good, and he could beat you with his legs in key moments. He did not decide to run yesterday for whatever reason. 14 rushing yards, non-factor. Only he knows whether he doesn't feel that he can, you know, get around the corner now. He doesn't have the speed, or whether he's concerned about getting injured, because he has been injured in the past. I don't know what the reason is, but what I do know is that he's no longer a dual-threat quarterback, and he's barely a one-threat quarterback because he's never, again, been a consistently good passer. And I just want to go back one moment to that final play to Dallas Goedert, because there are people on television who are, you know, paid to analyze these games, who are taking shots at Kevin Petullo. And as I said, look, the Eagles need an upgrade. They will make a change at the offensive coordinator position. But to pin the last play on Kevin Petullo is laughable. And I will explain to you what was said by at least one analyst, former player, about that last play. The last play, four vertical routes on the 49ers side of the field. The 49ers were playing cover four. And the analyst says, what a terrible play call. Why would you call four verticals against the cover four? That's the worst possible play you could have against the cover four. To which I really wanted to ask at least one analyst, do you not understand that the offensive play comes in before the defense is set? And the defensive play caller, in this case, Robert Saleh, does not tell Kevin Petullo, hey, Kevin, we're going to play quarters. We're playing cover four. So devise your best play against that. No, it is incumbent upon the quarterback, after he receives the offensive play call, to look at the defense at the line of scrimmage. And if he sees that, hey, you know what? I'm seeing cover four here. This is going to counter what our play call was. I'm going to make adjustments at the line. Literally every elite smart quarterback makes adjustments based on what they see at the line of scrimmage. If the play call that came in is going to work based off of what the quarterback sees pre-snap, then they go with it. If he says, oh man, this is a nightmare scenario, there's no way what we called is going to work against what I see pre-snap, you call an adjustment. You audible. You make changes at the line. You literally see that every single week by smart elite quarterbacks. Jalen Hurts is not an elite quarterback for a number of different reasons. This is one of those reasons. If he saw and recognized the coverage, he should have checked out of it. Now look, defenses are great at disguising, and that's why elite smart quarterbacks are paid $50 million, like, by the way, Jalen Hurts is being paid, to decipher what's happening pre-set snap and to make quick decisions off of changes in the defensive scheme post-snap. That's what Joe Burrow is unbelievable at. That's what Patrick Mahomes is unbelievable at. Matthew Stafford, Aaron Rodgers, those guys are operating intellectually from a football perspective, not book smart, but football perspective. They're operating intellectually at a rare level. Jalen Hurts is not at their level. And that's why he doesn't make adjustments consistently to get them into better positions pre-snap. I've seen him play virtually every snap his entire career. Nothing has changed. The only thing that we see now is that when the team needs him to carry them to victory, he cannot do it. He can be a passenger along the way. He can turn around and hand off to a player who amassed more rushing yards in a single season from start to finish than anyone in the history of pro football, like Saquon Barkley did last year, to a Super Bowl. He can do those things. But if you're asking him to do what Josh Allen did in Jacksonville last weekend, you're going to be disappointed because he's not at that level and he's never been at that level.
I saw somewhere that 30% of the Eagles passing game on Sunday was curl routes. But it's just insane. The limited offense, and LeSean McCoy had a great quote. I think it was Sunday night or Monday, just about how limited that offense is. Dude, they probably ran four go routes because that's one of the handful of plays that actually works for that offense. And then we crap on Orlovsky a lot in the group message and right now. But, dude, I was watching some film he broke down, dude, where they ran the same play, either counter the other side and just flip the side four times on that final drive. There was five plays and four of them were the same.
Yeah, well, this is what I'll say about that. They're running plays that the quarterback is comfortable with. There have been multiple reports from reputable reporters who cover that team who have made it clear that Jalen Hurts essentially doesn't want to get out of his comfort zone. I'm paraphrasing. That's not word for word what the reports were. But it's essentially, he is comfortable with a certain style of offense. That's a reason why he's not under center very often. Because what happens when you're under center? When you're under center and you run a play action, what happens? Your back is turned to the defense. And when your back is to the defense, that's when defenses switch. And when you turn your head around after the play action fake, you might be looking at something completely different than you did when you snapped the ball. And it takes somebody to operate an extremely high level to make quick decisions off of changes that they had seen maybe a second half earlier when they snapped the ball. That's not an easy thing to do. That's why the Eagles are typically in shotgun. So everything is in front of Jalen Hurts. He never has to turn his back to the defense. He can see things develop. And that's why when you talk about routes, now, I say this all the time. Every team runs the same routes. What separates a good offensive coordinator from a bad offensive coordinator is not the routes. It's the timing of the routes. And when I say timing, I mean, when are you calling them? First, second, third down? What's the down and distance? And perhaps most importantly, the route combinations. If you've got three routes on a particular play, what are those route combinations? How intricate are those route combinations? So, you know, when people say, look, why don't you just run the – you know, a crosser to AJ Brown. You know, he's good at that. The offensive coordinator is not an idiot. Now, again, Kevin Petullo is going to be the fall guy. And I'm not saying Kevin Petullo is on the level of Sean McVay. He's not. Or Kyle Shanahan. He's not. Andy Reid. No, clearly not. But the offensive coordinator, every offensive coordinator, tailors a scheme that the quarterback is comfortable with. And if the quarterback cannot absorb intricate offensive schemes or dissect intricate defensive schemes pre and post snap, you're done. You're toast. Unless your running back runs for 2,500 yards. And how often does that happen?
Literally never. It's like, dude, it's like they're like me. I just run fucking sticks in Madden. You just have the slant on one side, you have the option route in the middle, and then you have the guy on the right side going deep. It's just like AJ Brown on a slant, Devontae Smith going deep, and then you have Dallas Goedert on an option route. Let's win a Super Bowl. Anyway, Bursch, Sunday Night Football, Gillette Stadium. It was windy. It was cold. And as per usual, the Patriots come out on top. Their first win, their first playoff win since the 2018 Super Bowl, the Super Bowl against the Rams. What is that? Super Bowl 54, I think they won. Their first win since Super Bowl 54. So, Bursch, how are you feeling about your Patriots right about now?
You got enough Crisco?
I actually ran out, and Crisco. Then the food line down the street from my house also ran out about 4 a.m. on this morning.
Oh, man. Well, I guess we're going to have to go looking for some more because I am covered in it, and I need more.
Wait, hold on. Is that why you have an ear infection right now?
It might be. It might be. That is great.
Oh, my God. Get this dude an ear candle.
You solved my problem, dude. So great to watch playoff football again as a Patriots fan. I loved that it was in the Sunday night slot because Sunday night football is my personal favorite for watching any kind of game. I'm one of those people that doesn't have to work on a Monday morning, so it works out perfect for me. Dude, this was one of those weird games. The only game of the weekend that was not decided by one score. It was decided by two scores in this one. And it was a weird game. You know, it was 6-3 at the half. It was a low-scoring, grinded-out type game, not what we were expecting from two pretty high-profile passing quarterbacks in Justin Herbert and Drake May. Drake May was a little shaky early on in this one, but was nails when the time when it mattered in the late in the game in the fourth quarter with an absolute money throw to Hunter Henry to seal the game. And I just want to come out and say how impressed I am with how the Patriots defense played in this game. Like we talked with Lorenzo Neal last week about how, like, we obviously knew that the offensive line for the Chargers was in shambles. So we knew that the Patriots were going to get home just, you know, at some point. Now, early on in this game, they were not getting home. And I was just like, dude, this is not good.
It was terrifying at first. That first that first completion to Gadsden where Herbert was in the pocket for what felt like 15 minutes.
I heard a stat today that it was his highest time to like pass of the season. I think it was like over 3.5 seconds that he had back there before he had to like really move. And, you know, but at the end of the day, the Patriots in the second half really changed up what they were doing. They were throwing stunts. They were bringing blitzing. I think there was one drive where they were just blitzing every play because they were getting there. And it was just impressive. Anytime any kind of NFL team holds another NFL offense to no touchdowns, especially in the playoffs, is an impressive feat. And, you know, there's still a lot for this Patriots team to clean up going into the divisional round next week, especially offensively. You know, the left side of the offensive line was an absolute disaster. Will Campbell and Jared Wilson were getting beat at will, which is why Drake May was taking hits. Got sacked quite a few times, had a couple of fumbles back there, which put some on the offensive line, some on the quarterback for that. But at the end of the day, I'm very happy with this team moving on, getting a playoff win for the first time since Brady and Belichick were here, and definitely looking forward to next weekend.
Hey, yeah, obviously the story is the defense, right? Hopefully Gonzo, I don't think we're probably going to be missing him next week after the concussion on one of the last plays of the game. Guys like Christian Ellis, guys like guys like Luther Durden, like there's guys like Woodson and Woods on the back end, having one of the best games of his professional career at 12 tackles. I think he had one tackle for loss. The one quote I want to, this is like a, this is, this strikes me as another like non friggin just throwaway Patriots, like early playoff victory, like of like the last 20 years, dude. Justin Herbert has nothing around him. Zach Kaur mixed it up unbelievably, made Herbert hang on to the ball a little bit longer than he could. And if you marry that with your pass rush, obviously you have what happens. Is it exacerbated by the fact that they have the absolute worst offensive line I've ever seen in my entire life? Yeah, but there is something to be said about getting players back like Landry and Spillane. Milton Williams obviously comes through and seals the game. And Drake May is good when he matters. Is there a shitload of stuff that scares me if we have to play that Houston defense with that front four, with that defensive line? Yeah, I think Drake May is going to be in for a hair on fire type of game. Thank God they can't score. But I think, like you said, the story is the Pats defense. They hadn't really played a lot of matchup zone or man all year. They kind of had a soft shell zone. They had a lot of matchup zone and a lot of man tonight. So I just think that, like you said, they were getting home with the pressure. They married that with some great coverage on the back end. I think Gonzo is just proven to be just a diva cornerback. No offense, Gonzo, love you, mean it, handsome. But if the lights aren't bright, if it's not Jamar Chase or Jettas across from him, he maybe falls asleep a little bit. But when the pressure ramps up, I want zero on my team. He had a great game. Other than that, man, I just don't think this is, I don't really think you learned a lot about the Patriots in this game. They learned how to win the game a little bit differently on defense, but I don't think you learn a ton from the Patriots in this game. It's a great win. Survive in advance, like we said, the NCAA, what you call it, the NCAA analogy. But I just think the Patriots, this team has to make the AFC Championship game now. How this is setting up, this game, they're playing too well. They're all pulling in the same direction. They have the second best quarterback left in football, in my opinion, right now. So I don't think there's no reason for this team not to play with house money and fucking win this next game against a lesser Texans or Steelers team. There's no excuses now.
Yeah, look, I'm going to look at it from the Chargers perspective. And, you know, we got some good insight from Lorenzo Neal last week. You know, one of the key questions entering the week across the league, not just in this game, was how much pressure does Justin Herbert have on him? You know, he's been an exceptional player, I think, in the regular season. He had lost his first two playoff games. I thought he played reasonably well in his first playoff loss against Jacksonville when the defense collapsed. But clearly he had a forgettable performance against the Texans last year. And this was an embarrassing performance by him. I thought it was an embarrassing performance by Greg Roman, the Chargers offensive coordinator. If you watch that game, there were, you know, plenty of times, especially in the fourth quarter when the Patriots were pinning their ears back and they were just demolishing Justin Herbert. But when you look at the first two, three quarters, I mean, there are plenty of opportunities for him from, you know, a pocket standpoint. And I think, Burge, you had said, you know, he had, what, 3+ seconds in the pocket. It's way more than enough time. It seemed like every play he was holding on to the ball. And look, we don't have the benefit of the All-22 on TV. We have the TV tape. You don't see the whole field. So you can't say for certain, you know, who's open, who's not open, how many guys are open and how often. But watching it on TV, every drop back had the same vibe to it. He would hold the ball and then he would scramble. And, you know, maybe he'd get 2 yards, 3 yards. You know, occasionally he'd get 5 or 6. You know, ended up with 57 yards on the ground on 10 runs. But I cannot believe that Greg Roman, who has had success in this league, did not make the proper adjustments after halftime, because, you know, they got shut out in the second half, couldn't score a touchdown, didn't find the end zone. And, you know, getting stopped on fourth down in the first quarter was a backbreaker, I think, from a momentum perspective. But Justin Herbert needs to play much, much better in critical moments in the playoffs moving forward, because he won't make the playoffs a lot, I think, moving forward. But at 0-3, I think you have a decent sample size to be highly critical of him. And can he win on the biggest stage? I mean, this was a game that he was supposed to, you know, have a breakout performance because of the, you know, the scars that he endured in the first two playoff losses. Drake May's making his first playoff game. And for the most part, it looked like a guy who was making his first, you know, start in a playoff game, you know, with some of the shaky play. In the fourth quarter, he came through, and, you know, this is a game that had one total touchdown. It was a game of field goals, so neither offense was particularly impressive. But as you guys said, the story of the game clearly was the Patriots defense. But it's very disappointing when you have an experienced, seasoned offensive coordinator who I believe was the offensive coordinator for the 49ers when Harbaugh was their head coach and went to the Super Bowl. I mean, this is a guy who's had a lot of success in this league with one of the young, bright stars at quarterback. And they couldn't get a touchdown.
Somebody who was the linebackers coach when the season started. It's not even like you're going against the Patriots defensive coordinator.
Right. Yeah. And look, I
know he has 18 weeks of experience, but
sure. I'm sure that, you know, Vrabel has a hand in game planning and things of that nature. But look, the offensive line stinks. We know that. We know the offensive line stinks. That's not an excuse in this game. Like, this is not an excuse making game for Justin Herbert to say, we didn't have, you know, Alt and Slater. We obviously haven't had Slater all season, but, you know, we haven't had our two projected starting tackles. That is an excuse. That is not the reason they lost this game. They have plenty of playmakers that he can throw to, tight end, receivers. And I know Omarion Hampton didn't play. He was a rookie. So, okay, so you didn't have Omarion Hampton. You know that to me is not the reason they lost. I can't tell you what the reason is, but I can tell you what isn't the reason. And it's not because the offensive line was a sieve for four quarters, because it wasn't a sieve for four quarters. It was, you know, in the fourth quarter.
Second half,
sure. But there were opportunities and plays to be made. And there was also some curious, you know, play calling when they got into the green zone inside the 10. And that's a Greg Roman situation. But, you know, Justin Herbert just did not make plays. And it's weird for me to say this, but you have to be honest. A great talent, a great player. But he folded in a big moment against a rookie quarterback. And as good as the quarterback was this year, he was still a rookie. And made his fair share of mistakes, fumbled twice, lost once, threw a pick and got bailed out by the defense early. But Justin Herbert needs to play at a much better, much higher level if he legitimately wants to be considered one of the best players at his position. I think from a talent perspective, and from a regular season output perspective, he is that, but you have to deliver in the postseason. It's not as if he's a second or third year player. This is a guy who's been around now to see three playoff runs, and they've all been one and done. It's not good enough. It's extremely disappointing. And frankly, it's a head-scratching performance from somebody who, frankly, is a big believer in Justin Herbert, and I've been, you know, since day one.
I just have two things I want to get off my chest about this game. The quarterbacks for both teams leading rushers in this game, too. And the way that Chris Collinsworth was talking about it on the broadcast, like, it makes you feel like that both of these teams came in. And that this was he was hearing like this was going to be part of the game plan, that they were going to run these quarterbacks. And, you know, part of me makes me think that, like, he was onto something with that, as much as, you know, you have your opinions about Collinsworth, you know. So that was interesting from a scheme game plan perspective. And then,
so if your game plan is to run your injured quarterback that you had to sit week 18, like, you suck. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, the second point I want to bring up is Robert Spillane after the game said that the Chargers players came up to him.
I was
going to
bring this
and
up.
Said the offense had no clue what the Patriots defense was going on. So you talk about Zach Kerr, the linebackers coach, who's calling the plays for the Patriots defense, completely, I'll use my term from earlier, pantsed Greg Roman in the second half of this game. Actually, but I'd argue the whole game. Because obviously they didn't score any touchdowns.
Yeah, and I think getting back to the quarterback thing that you guys both led off with, I think if Herbert's the one that throws the fourth quarter touchdown to Rondae Gadsden, I think this entire podcast changes. It changes to Herbert got knocked around the entire game, stayed in there, showed resolve, and came through in the clutch. And instead, that's like kind of the narrative on Drake May. Yeah, he made his typical Drake May young quarterback mistakes. There's a couple fumbles in the intercept. Even though the interception was tipped, threw it into a congested area. Still don't like that decision. There was another fumble. Yeah, the fumble that Jared Wilson recovered. So there's multiple turnovers. But once again, he gets off platform. Travion Henderson makes an unbelievable blitz pickup. So you have two young players coming through, and a veteran catching it on the other end. Kind of a nice little picture, nice little snapshot of the Patriots season.
This podcast is a lot different if that game goes the other way last night. Let's be real.
Yeah, there would be just no third screen. It would just be dark over here.
Joe, I'm glad you brought up the Henderson blitz pickup, because wasn't that one of the questions entering the season?
Yeah. And it was portrayed as a strength coming out of college. And then get into the season, and they figure out he can't do it at the NFL level. And that's when he goes on the shelf for the first 6 weeks. And me and you are in the group message as Travion Henderson buyers in fantasy. We're like, what the hell is going on here? I pick up friggin' Ramondre Stevenson. Dude goes for 40 points the next week. Anyway, you want to plug this thing up, Bears? You guys got anything else?
Dude, I'm good. We talked pretty good here. I want to get out. You know, obviously we're recording on Monday night, so I want to get out and catch the second half of this game so I can see who the Patriots are playing next week.
Yeah, CJ Stroud, two fumbles in the first quarter.
Not great.
In the first half. Not great. But we will catch you next week after hopefully another exciting weekend of playoff football. See you later. Bye-bye.